Well, today, Helen Christensen, our own Helen Christensen, is going to make the presentation as part of the series on famous Unitarians. She's going to be talking about Dorothy Livesay today. And I'll just introduce Helen. Everybody knows her already, I think, but here we go. She is the current chair of the Sunday Service Committee, and she's a former professor in the Faculty of Education at the University of Regina. She has been an activist many years of her life around issues of equality and justice. Helen and her husband Bruno, our late chaplain, have lived in Regina for about 25 years now and have been members of the fellowship for about five. So Helen, would you like to come and make the presentation?
First of all, this was really a challenge. She was absolutely an extraordinary woman. So you're going to find that this presentation, and I've really worked on it to try to make it possible, but you're probably going to have to listen to the podcast to get the facts again. Anyway, most of the information comes from the Dictionary of Unitarian and Universalist Biography. There's a little bit in the Canadian Encyclopedia. Anyway, what I'm going to do is, first of all, I'm going to give you just a very brief overview, then a biography, then a little bit, and there is very little about her as a Unitarian, and then I will read a few of her poems. So overview. So Dorothy Livesay lived from 1909 to 1996. She was born and spent the first 11 years of her life in Winnipeg. She is considered to have been one of the leading Canadian poets of the 20th century. And Lindsay was a poet her entire life, no matter what else she may have been doing. When I looked through all the things that I found out about her, I'm wondering, and just, you know, look into this, if poetry was part of her spiritual existence. Anyway, her free verse poetry probes the mysteries of existence, life and death, waking and dreaming, love and hate, male and female, being and doing. In other words, just about everything. And Wikipedia lists 25 books of poetry by Livesay. 25 books. If you go to the library, there's a whole shelf, you know. I took out a few, but I don't think I have time to read all her poems today. Okay. Now, according to the Canadian Encyclopedia, Dorothy Livesay published prolifically, and her lifelong concern for women's rights and the identity of the woman artist ripened over time. And in the 70s and 80s, Livesay was regarded as a senior woman writer in Canada. And finally, in this overview, as a social worker, a teacher, and a radical journalist, Livesay fiercely protested social habits and policies of oppression and destruction. And this was also part of Livesay's entire life. I mean, she was just an incredible woman. I mean, she lived, capital L. Okay, biography. Now, this is the part where you're probably going to have to re-listen on podcasts because her life was so full. So Dorothy Livesay's mother was a poet and journalist. Her father was the general manager of Canadian Press. Both of her parents encouraged her literary efforts. In 1920, when she was 11 years old, Livesay moved to Toronto with her family. There, she attended a private girls' school. From 1927 to 1931, Livesay attended the University of Toronto, where she got her BA in 1931. Now, so we're looking at the 1930s. Hang on here. Then, in 1931 and 32, she was a graduate student at the Sorbonne. and there in Paris, and there she moved in radical circles and became a committed communist. Upon her return to Canada, she enrolled in a diploma program in the School of Social Work at the University of Toronto. And at the same time, she joined the Communist Party of Canada and was active in a number of its front organizations: the Canadian Labor Defense League, the Canadian League Against War and Fascism, Friends of the Soviet Union, and the Workers' Unity League. So we're talking about the 1930s. She was in her 20s, and those were very busy years. She lived in Montreal in 1933-34, in New Jersey in 1934-35, and there she worked among the unemployed. Then in 1935, she moved to Vancouver to become the Western editor of the communist journal New Frontier. And in Vancouver, at 28 years of age, in 1937, Livesey married Duncan McNair, a Scottish accountant who had traveled widely before settling in Vancouver. They had two children, beginning of the 1940s. They had two children, Peter and Marcia. Having children meant that Livesey had to adjust to the routines of family responsibility. So for a while, she was a family person. But by that time, she had become disenchanted with communism. And this is what she wrote. So it's a quote. "I was disgusted with myself for having been so duped. But I believe I let myself be duped because no one else except the communists seemed to be concerned about the plight of our people, nor to be aware of the threat of Hitler and war." And that was true at that time, that people became communists to fight the fascists. Okay, so that was the 30s and 40s. Then, in the late 1950s, when her children had grown and were out in the world, Livesey decided to become a teacher. And so, for a year, she studied the teaching of English at London University. So she went to Britain. I don't know why she went there, but okay. But then, early in 1959, she received the news of Duncan's sudden death from a massive stroke. So they hadn't been together for very long, eh? 1937, 1959. After the death of her husband, Livesey worked for UNESCO in Paris, and then at a teacher's training college in northern Rhodesia, which is now Zambia, from 1959 to 1963. And then this next part, I couldn't find the connection, but you'll find it interesting. During that time, so 1959 to 1963, she continued to mature as a poet, and she published a collection called The Color of God's Face, and this was published to benefit the Unitarian Service Committee. And I couldn't find out the connection there, but anyway, okay. When Livesey returned to Canada, okay, so then she was in her 50s, she again enrolled as a graduate student, and in 1964 earned an M.Ed. degree from the University of British Columbia. So she was 55 when she got her Master of Education. Then, for a decade after that, she was engaged as a writer-in-residence at a series of Canadian universities, and it's a whole list. She was everywhere. And during that period of her life, she received several honors for her poetry and honorary degrees from those universities. In retirement, well, okay, officially, at age 65, in retirement, Livesey was appointed to the Order of Canada in 1987 and the Order of British Columbia in 1992. For a number of years, she lived on Galliano Island, which is a rural retreat between Vancouver and Victoria. Eventually, she moved to Victoria, where she was a regular attending member of the Unitarian Church. She died in Victoria, B.C. in 1996, and she was 87 years old at the time of her death. And here, Livesey once wrote, "Every decade we become a different person. It is said that this sentence could be taken to describe her career. But again, poetry was always part of her life. So, Livesey the poet, just a couple of things. In the early 1940s, Livesey and a few of her sister poets started a poetry magazine called Contemporary Verse. The first issue came out in September 1941. In 1975, when she was 66, she founded the journal Contemporary Verse 2. And the reason I'm saying this is that still exists today as Contemporary Verse 2, the Canadian Journal of Poetry and Critical Writing. So she left that as her legacy. Now, what I was able to find out about Livesey the Unitarian. In childhood, Livesey had accepted without question her mother's conventional Anglicanism, which was reinforced at school. Her father, however, was a religious skeptic. In her university years, Livesey declared herself emancipated from her religious upbringing and prepared to accept Marxist ideology, yet not without a sense of contradiction. Livesey wrote, "At the same time that I was embracing economic determinism and naturalism, I was also taking delight in the study of 17th century poets, all of whom were writing not in praise of man, but for the greater glory of God." Livesey's husband, Duncan McNair, and here I don't know how to pronounce this, so whatever, was an ardent theosophist. And I had to look that up. So theo from the Greek means God, and sophos means wise. And the dictionary definition is a philosophy or religion that claims to have insight through spiritual self-development. And this part I found very interesting, so turn on your Unitarian head here, your Unitarian brain. Theosophy is a philosophical system based on a belief in a universal, eternal principle fundamental to all life. The Theosophical Society was founded in New York in 1875 to form the nucleus of a universal brotherhood of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, caste, or color. The society encouraged the study of comparative religion, philosophy, and science. Now that sounds pretty Unitarian to me, eh? The Canadian branch of the society was formed in Toronto in 1891. And in 1919, an autonomous Canadian section, the Theosophical Society in Canada, was formed. And today, there are active Theosophist lodges listed in Alberta, British Columbia, Ontario, and Quebec. So Livesey and her husband settled in Vancouver. And at the time, a number of Theosophists were members of the Unitarian Church of Vancouver, which the McNair family also began to attend. They were pleased with the church's freedom from dogma, and also pleased that the church embraced strong social concerns. Yet, Dorothy and Duncan were reluctant to join the Unitarian Church, because at that time, they felt the church's services lacked spiritual depth. As Livesey put it, she missed there the sense of the mysteriousness of life. But in 1955, they finally became members. And here are two extracts, and they call them sermons. I'm imagining they mean presentations. Anyway, in 1951, in her presentation or sermon, this is what Livesey said. "I was brought up in an Orthodox religious atmosphere. My mother's Church of England dominated my early years. I paid little attention to the fact that my father was a heretic and a skeptic. However, after steadfast attendance at church and Sunday school, at 15 years of age, I startled my Sunday school teacher by questioning certain articles of Anglican dogma. Later at university, I found a very free spirit of inquiry into the historical origins of Judaism and Christianity. Perhaps this made it easier for me to repudiate Orthodox religion and eventually to accept as a substitute the deterministic Marxist view of the origin of man. The paradox continues, however, for at the same time that I was embracing economic self-determinism, I was also taking delight in the study of the 17th century poets, all of whom were writing not in praise of man, but for the greater glory of God. And this is an article which was from an article written by Philip Hewitt, who was the emeritus minister of the Unitarian Church of Vancouver. And then finally, in another sermon she gave in 1956, Livesey, and I quote, tackled some present-day problems of religion and of religion as poetry. She questioned the honesty of a position that proclaims faith in man, but which ignores those works of man which have their origin in intuition and in identification with a power outside man. Now, that was all that I was able to find, but I have to share. I have three poems that I just have to share. Gives you an idea of her. So, and I'm sorry that Hillary's not here, so I guess, Jim, you're going to have to listen to this. Livesey was a founding member of the League of Canadian Poets. She was also a founding member of Amnesty International. Isn't that amazing? She was just amazing. And the Committee for an Independent Canada. She was awarded the Governor General's Award for Poetry in 1944 and 47, and the Queen's Canada Medal in 1977. Her walls must have been just covered with awards, eh? Okay. First poem. This comes from Poetry is Like Bread or whatever. Okay. We women are everyone beginning to share. Poetry is communication, not a game played with words. A poem is a message. Our poem, everyone's, must be a message for survival. Let it sound out clear, signpost and banner, plain talk. No more war. And this one comes from something called Family Tree, and it's about her and her grandmother. I love this one, so you have to listen very carefully. As I stand here beside you in an orange organdy dress floppily hanging below the knees with a Peter Pan collar, prim pockets, I'm already taller than you. You in your black alpaca with its neat tongue of white pique from neck to waist. I remember you again, oh my gran, stooped and severe, your white hair curly still. Your eyes, skeptical, searching, sea blue, and your voice, musical, proverbial, saying, above all else, be truthful, never tell a white lie. Oh, my gran, life would be simple for my children and grandchildren if lies, black or white, were the only barriers. And then this last one, I just couldn't resist, okay? So I hope it's not a good day to read it, but okay. This is from two poems and extracts from, written in the 1980s, and it's called, okay, wait for it, January Snow, a Letter. I am so at home with winter. You couldn't even lure me into those Bahaman, Jamaican, Highlands, islands, the lush, curled, succulent Hawaiian sands where Winnipeggers fly in droves to forget Christmas and ice-bound New Year's trees cushioned in white reefs of snow where squirrels burrow. I need to skate on ice with no escape, just facing up together to near blizzard weather. So, that's it.